Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's
local and loyal programming.
Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zibbymedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Tana French is the author of The Hunter, a novel. Tana is the New York Times bestselling author of 8 previous books, including In the Woods, The Likeness, and The Searcher. Her novels have sold over 3 million copies and won numerous awards, including the Edgar Anthony McCavity and Barry Awards, the Los Angeles Book Prize for Best Mystery Thriller, and the Irish Book Award for Crime Fiction. She lives in Dublin with her family.
Welcome, Tana. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your latest novel, The Hunter. Congratulations.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. For those of you who are just listening, you will not know that the cover of Tana's book is basically the same exact color as her hair, which is impressive. They are both a beautiful sort of orangey red glimmery confection. I don't know. Okay, so Tana, tell everybody, what is The Hunter about?
Well, it is about a small village in the west of Ireland during a summer that's having a heat wave, which we do not have an awful lot, and two men come to the townland. One of them is coming home. He's a guy, kind of ne'er-do-well, who went away a few years ago and is now back. And both of them are coming to get rich, or so they think, and one of them is going to die that summer. And meanwhile, there's a guy called Cal. He's a retired Chicago detective. He's built himself a new life there with a girlfriend. The two of them are raising a local teenager from kind of a half-feral kid into a good kid going good places. But this is the teenager, Trey's father, who has come back. and all their relationship starts to get a little bit disrupted and their delicate balance is under threat. And Cal and Lena, his girlfriend, are both ready to do whatever it takes to protect Trey, but she does not want protecting. She wants revenge.
Uh-oh. And where did this idea come from? Where did the idea for the book originate?
Well, my last one, The Searcher, was kind of a linked book. It's got a lot of the same characters. It's set in the same place. And where the whole world of this little Irish village came from was I had suddenly discovered the Western genre with Lonesome Dove and True Grit and The Sisters Brothers and all these great books, which I'd never discovered before. And I realized that a lot of the Western tropes are actually a really good match for Irish settings because you've got kind of in both genres, you've got that sense of a wild, harsh, beautiful place that's going to demand a lot of toughness from the people who want to live there. And you've also got that sense of a place that's really distant from the centers of power, both geographically, but also culturally. So the people who live there feel like the power mongers don't know or care about their lives. And if they want to function in society, they're going to have to construct their own rules and enforce them. And I started thinking of bringing some of those Western tropes to a West of Ireland setting. So in The Searcher, I was working with, you know, the stranger who blows into town and things sort of change around him, whether he likes it or not. He's a catalyst for change. And Cal, the guy who's taken early retirement from Chicago PD and come there looking for some kind of peace and moral certainty, he's that guy. But in this one, I was thinking about other tropes. I was thinking about, you know, the gold rush, there's gold in them there hills. And I was thinking that actually fit surprisingly well in Ireland, because we do have, as one of the characters says in the book, an awful lot of ancient gold artifacts. Clearly, there were people digging up and smithing gold thousands of years ago. And there have been teeny, mini gold rushes up through the centuries, even quite recently. So that wouldn't do badly. What if Trey's absent father comes home and he's brought along a British millionaire and a scheme to find gold in the townland? And of course, I was also thinking about the revenge trope that shows up in Westerns a lot. And what if Trey, rather than wanting gold, wants revenge? How would those two intertwine?
Wow. So how much research did you have to do with the gold rush and the influence in Ireland and all of it?
That's a lot of fun, actually, because I hadn't really thought very much about it. I'd been to the National Museum where there are all these incredible ancient gold artifacts. You know, those torques, those collars, beautifully worked, and earrings and brooches and just amazing stuff. But I hadn't really thought about them in that light until I started researching this book and went, okay, is there any signs since? And yes, there is. There was like a little mini gold rush in Wicklow in the 1840s. Within the last couple of decades, there have been people applying for licenses to dig for gold in the mountains. I was going, geez, I had no idea. We're all sitting on top of gold mines for all we know.
Wow. When you started getting into Westerns, was it just reading? Was it TV? Like, how immersed did you get in this whole world?
It was mostly reading, because that's, you know, that's where I naturally gravitate. I love books. That's where I'm going to go. But also a few films, like a few of the older films. My husband, who is very into old movies, Westerns, he was, you know, pointing me in the right direction, going, you have to see this, you have to see this, just to pick up on what are those tropes that I wanted to use, which ones are useful. But mostly it was stuff like the whole Lonesome Dove Quartet, which I think is one of the absolute greats, not just of Westerns, but of American literature, Lonesome Dove is. But I also dipped into more modern stuff, like The Sisters Brothers, again, which is quite modern, but it is in that sense a Western. It's got that Western theme of a search, of people going looking for somebody and finding other stuff along the way and realizing that this is actually more core to their journey than whoever the guy is that they were actually looking for. There's some wonderful stuff out there.
Wow. And tell me how you got your start originally. Like, when did you know, like, going back, you were going to be a writer?
Well, when I was a little kid, that was what I wanted to be. But I sort of got sidetracked as a teenager and ended up doing acting, training as an actor, and acting for like 10 years. And the thing about acting is I was mostly theater. And unless you're like, you know, Judy Dench, which I never was, your gigs aren't going to line up neatly. There's always space in between. And in one of those spaces, I was working on an archaeological dig, which I loved. And there was a wood not far from the dig. And I went, God, that would be a great place for kids to play. And then instead of stopping there, I went, well, what if three kids ran in there and only one came out. Mm. And he had no memory of what had happened to the other two. Like, what would that do to your mind as you grew up, knowing that the answer to this mystery is hidden somewhere inside your head, but you can't put your finger on it? And what if he became a detective and a murder case led him back to that wood? And I didn't really think about writing it because I'd never tried to write a book before. I just scribbled the idea down on a piece of paper and went off to do the next show and forgot about it. But then I found the piece of paper like a year later and realized I really want to know what happens with that story. And nobody else was going to write it for me. There was only one way to find out. So I sort of started going, well, you know, I probably can't write a book, but I can write one scene and then another scene and then a chapter. And suddenly there I was, realizing that I was really serious about finishing this book and finding out.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And then what was your journey to publication like? Did you find that to be an easy transition? I mean, it's not always easy to say, okay, I'm going to put down the acting gig and now I'm going to enter the new industry.
Well, that was a really weird feeling, actually, because if you know any actors, you know that except for like the absolute top echelons, they don't turn down work. They always want more work. And that was the moment when I realized that I had just said no to a really good show because I wanted to finish this book. That was the moment where I went, oh my God, I think I'm really serious about this. I think I've got myself into something that sucked me in. I was lucky because I happened to know somebody who was in publishing, in an Irish publishing house, wonderful woman, wonderful editor. And I sent her the first few chapters and went, okay, tell me straight up, is this something that I should be finishing or is this something I should be throwing under the bed and never speaking of again? Just tell me that. And she went, no, finish it. And gradually it went from there, step by step. So I got lucky, I think. It happened to land on the right desks at the right moment. I was very lucky. There are a lot of really good writers out there for whom it takes a long time for that to happen.
And then how about coming up with subsequent ideas? Were they as gripping as your first one, or have you been forever searching for something quite as intoxicating?
Well, I think one of the things that makes people into mystery writers is that at some level, you're always looking for a potential mystery in even the most mundane things. Like that, you know, it's a wood. Normal people stop at, hey, that would be a great place for kids to play. But if you've got a mystery writer head, you're saying, how could that be mysterious? What could underlie it that would be a mystery? And so most of the ideas for my other books have come from things that are equally sort of everyday stuff. Like for Faithful Place, I was walking home and there was an old blue suitcase in a skip. I don't know, would you call it a dumpster? Outside the house that was being cleared out, you know, one of those great big bins.
Yep.
And there was an old blue suitcase. And I started going, I wonder how long that's been there. I wonder who left it there. I wonder if they were going somewhere. Maybe they never made it there. And suddenly you've got a book. And, you know, Broken Harbor was because we had mice in the flat where we were living. It's little stuff and trying to find mysteries all the time.
So funny, because I don't come from a mystery writer brain at all. So when I see a wood, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I hope there's not like some terrible animal that's going to come get me. I better stay away from there. And I like turn and run. So I'm like too worried to even make any stories up to scare myself.
Stay far away from them. And yeah, somebody else can go deal with the animal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's amazing. So when you piece together your book scene by scene, chapter by chapter, is that still the way you do it as how you started in the beginning, where you take little pieces of it? Or now do you plot out everything and sort of, you know, put things in as you see fit? Like, what is your process?
No, it's still basically the same as it was back then. I start out with a really clear idea of the main character. I think it might be because of coming from an acting background, I need to be very clear who the character is, that I'm working from their perspective. I start with a clear idea of the main setting and with a really basic premise, like that with the woods. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of dive in and figure it out as I go. It is a bit scary because, like, I know writers who have it all plotted out. They know chapter by chapter, beat by beat. And for them, they know there's a book there. They know all the loose ends are going to tie up, all the threads are going to make sense. And I don't know that. And I'm always aware that I could dive in there someday and, like, you know, the equivalent of hitting my head on the bottom going, uh-oh, there's no book there. What do I do now? But I think I have to do it the same way I did, where I'm writing because I really want to find out what happens.
And do you ever miss acting?
Yeah, I do little bits here and there, but I do miss it. I mean, writing's very solitary. It's a big change after acting. And it's also, I'm not sure what the word is I'm looking for, but it's very solitary professionally as well. Like if you have a bad day as an actor, we're just, you know, those days where you're working away and just nothing works, your brain is sticky or something. If you're an actor, the director will give you a nudge, or somebody else in the scene with you will throw you something interesting to work off, and suddenly you're through that barrier and everything's working again. If you're a writer, there is no director, there is no other actor. There's you and your notebook, and you had better find some way to unsticky your brain. So that, yeah, I miss that. I miss the social elements as well. I miss, you know, we've done a show, let's all go to the pub and talk about it, or we've had a long day's rehearsal, we'll all talk it over. So I miss those bits. But what I love about writing, right, is I'm free to do it whenever. Because as an actor, you're dependent on someone else to give you permission to work. As a writer, I can work whenever I want. All I need is a pen and a notebook. And it's wonderful. It's really liberating. And I still appreciate that.
Do you write with a pen and a notebook?
Sort of back and forth. Like I'll start scenes with a pen and a notebook and then go put them on the computer and do something else with them and scribble a bit. I'm back and forth and messy and disorganized.
That's okay.
Whatever works.
Whatever works. Whatever works. Oh my gosh.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What are you working on for your next book after this?
This is weird because I thought The Searcher was a standalone. Mm-hmm. And then I was just enjoying that whole like mystery software on Western hardware feel so much that I ended up doing The Hunter. Mm-hmm. And now I'm realizing that whatever arcs I've set up between the two of those books for these kind of linked books within mm-hmm. this one village world, those arcs aren't complete, like the themes or whatever the characters are doing. So it seems to be turning out to be a trilogy, which is not what I expected. But I like those people. I like that setting. I like the chance to spend a little longer there.
Oh, I love that. It must be nice sort of re-tapping in, you know, reuniting, that's the word, reuniting with your characters again, right? It can be sad saying goodbye, so.
Yeah, it kind of can. And especially these books I don't think are as dark as some of my other ones. These are all, basically the main characters are all people who care a lot about each other and are trying to do that well. And it's not always an easy thing to do well, but they are really doing everything they can to do it right and be good to each other. And that's a nice world to be in.
That is a nice world to be in. So when you're not reading old Westerns, what are some of the things, like what's on your nightstand right now?
Oh, I got lucky. I got a sneaky early copy of Amor Towles's short fiction collection, yep. Table for Two. And I loved Lincoln Highway. I loved Gentleman in Moscow. And so this was like, oh, major treat here. And unsurprisingly, it's great. It is wonderful.
Did you read his earlier one, The Rules of Civility?
Yes, love that too. But I felt a kind of special attachment to Gentleman in Moscow mm-hmm. because that's where one side of my family comes from. is the whole Russian aristocracy world. And my mother gave me the book going, if you want to understand that side of your family, read this book. She was absolutely convinced that the author had to be from that background. And apparently, no, nothing at all. He's just really, really good at immersing himself in a world and making it come alive.
Wow. So how much do you know about your history in the Russian aristocracy?
Not an awful lot, really, because, you know, it's one of those things where, obviously, if you were Russian aristocracy, then in the last 100 years, you have not been that at all. So, right. You know, there's nobody left in Russia, no connections left back there, no places to go back to or anything. I don't even speak Russian, which I feel really guilty about, but not much of a connection left except old photos and bits and pieces. And not a lot.
No. Do you ever read, like, totally off genre? Like, I'm just in the mood for a rom-com or just something like totally unexpected.
Yeah, I do. I like all kinds of stuff. Like, I don't really stick too hard to mystery. I think partly because I like books that mix genres up anyway.
Yep.
So I'm going to be reading a mix of genres. Yeah, I like, you know, historical romance. I like Georgette Heyer, for example. I read a certain amount of kids' books because I've got a certain amount of kids. Mystery and Western and just a mix of stuff. Yeah, I'll try anything. A lot of literary fiction and Joseph O'Connor, for example, Shadow Play was one of my great books of the last year. Yeah, bits of it all.
Have you managed to raise readers and writers?
Readers, definitely. They're not at the point where you can tell whether they're writers yet, although one is absolutely determined that that's where she's headed. And yeah, no matter how I try to convince her to go get a job, she's not writing all the way.
My son just came home with this book. He's 9. It's like 2 pages, but he wrote it in school. It took like this whole year. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think you're going to be a writer. And he was like, great. Like, I'm, you know, he's like, I want to be a writer. Like, you're a writer. And it was like the cutest thing. I was like, this is literally better than anything that could ever happen.
It is kind of wonderful, isn't it? Especially when you're going, but that's lovely. What you wrote is lovely. You're sort of delighted and sort of proud. And then this other part of me is going, child, rebel against your parents. Be an accountant, for God's sake.
Oh, no, I don't know. I took accounting. I wouldn't wish that on somebody who really wants to be a writer. I think it's like, that was tough. That was like the worst class I think I've ever taken. I mean, that's not how my brain works. That's all. I'll just say that.
Mine neither. Definitely not. Very much not.
So what advice would you give to aspiring authors?
Well, read a lot is the kind of the cliched one, I think, is because the more you read, the more you find things that give you a sense of rhythms of language, rhythms of structure, and that give you a deep sense of character. And I think also my big one is, I'm not sure this is for everybody, but be true to your characters. Mm. Like, if your characters wouldn't do X thing, then even if you need X thing to happen for the plot, don't force it that way. You're going to have to find another way around it. The other one is cut the dream sequence. My husband has a thing about the dream sequence, right? And he's my first reader. He's really good structurally because of being a film guy. Like, he directs films.
Yeah.
You know, he's a film guy. And so he has a demon eye for structure. And one of the things he is just obsessive about is kill the dream sequence. He says it is always either a repeat of something that you already did in the main action, or else it's a lazy way of doing something that you should do in the main action. So I think in 9 books, he has let me get away with 1 dream sequence.
Oh my God.
Even that was barely even, you know, a couple of paragraphs. So yeah, cut the dream sequence. You can find a better way to do that. And small one on a stylistic level, don't be scared of saying said. Like, you get writers who are scared to say she said, he said, in case it sounds boring. But it genuinely doesn't, because as a reader, I know my brain just cancels that out. It's the default.
Yep.
But if people start throwing in more and more convoluted verbs, like, you notice. I remember reading one book where the author was so terrified of using said that characters were like, they were braying, they were hooting, they were bleating. It was like old McDonald's farm in there. Said is fine. You're cool with said.
Somebody once told me, because about dialogue, like, give your readers a little more credit. Like, you don't even always have to spell it out. Like, they'll follow along. Like, your brain just, you know, you'll alternate and you don't have to always even say it.
Yeah. And I end up having to catch myself and cut adverbs from the dialogue thing, because, you know, I mean, if you're writing a line of dialogue clearly enough, it's going to be clear that he said it happily or angrily or whatever it is. You don't need to tell the reader. The reader is smart enough to gather that part.
Right. Or they should figure it out.
Or I should write the dialogue better. So that
you should write the dialogue. That's so funny. So if you had one chance, if there was one part in one play that someone came to you today and said, I'm offering you this, like, what part would you just never turn down?
One.
Just one.
Okay, can I cheat and go one that I really wish I'd done when I was younger and now
yes,
I've aged?
Yeah.
I love Viola from Twelfth Night. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love her. Because here she is, right? She has to pretend to be someone she's not. She's surrounded by all these people who are like wildly deceiving themselves in every way, but she somehow manages to hang on to the truths. Like, even when she has to deceive, her lines are so carefully structured so that she never outright lies. And she's grieving her brother. She's in love with a guy who's not in love with her. And yet she somehow keeps her sense of humor through it all. And I really like that combination of integrity and resourcefulness and humor under fire. So I would love to give Viola a go. I've been in Twelfth Night, but I was Feste, the clown. I was never Viola. And now I'm kind of thinking I might have aged out.
Well, I see a family production in your future. Maybe right. Around the house.
Grab the kids. Tell them you're doing this whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Your husband can direct the whole thing. And there you go.
Right. There you go.
Well, Tana, thank you so much. Congratulations on The Hunter. I wish you all the best. And yes, very exciting.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye. Take care. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.